It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll visit with some farmers in the Ohio Valley who are frustrated by ongoing trade disputes and unrealized relief from President Trump.
I would have rather him said, I have to do this, you're going to take the hit, sorry. You know, don't promise me you're going to take care of me and then don't.
We'll have that story coming up in just a few minutes. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin is the only Democratic senator who did not co-sponsor an LGBT anti-discrimination bill. The Registered Herald reports 44 Democratic U.S. senators and the two independent senators that caucus with them have signed on to Senate Bill 788. The bill, sponsored by U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, would add LGBT protections to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Manchin did not sponsor a similar proposal in 2017. A spokeswoman for his office declined to comment to the newspaper. West Virginia's other U.S. Senator, Republican Shelley Moore Capito, she also did not co-sponsor the bill. West Virginia ACLU Executive Director Joseph Cohen says he was sorely disappointed that neither of the state's U.S. senators endorsed the proposal. As the Trump administration's trade talks continue with China and other countries, farmers are feeling the pain from the president's year-long trade war. Tariffs on agriculture goods are compounding problems caused by low crop prices and overproduction. Liam Nehemiah reports small farms are suffering the most.
West Kentucky farmer Barry Alexander doesn't have an answer on when he thinks Trump will reach a trade deal with China. But his plan in the meantime lies in massive silver storage bins on his farm. He pulls a lever and yellow soybeans tumble out.
These beans have been in here since we finished up our harvest on Halloween Day.
He's been holding on to thousands of bushels of soybean and corn, holding out for a better price. Crop prices have crashed partly because of Chinese tariffs. Soybeans still sell for $1.50 less than this time last year. Alexander says the losses have put a strain on some farmers he knows.
There are farmers that have decided to retire because they didn't want to work through these things now. You're to that point.
Alexander says he survived in part because his large farm has resources, like storage bins, to help ride out bad crop prices. But many don't. And some economists say the year-long tariffs have hit small farmers harder because they can't always afford storage.
But because they couldn't actually store their commodity, they still had to deal with those lower prices.
That's Kent State University agribusiness professor Sankalp Sharma. He says grain prices have been low for 5 years because farmers are overproducing. Sharma says tariffs are only making this trend worse.
Soybean harvest this year in the United States, it was just crazy. Like, there was a bumper harvest and prices were just, you know, on the down because of that.
Both Ohio's and Kentucky's 2018 soybean harvest was the highest ever. And small dairy farmers are also dealing with too much supply. Greg Gibson milks 80 cows in northern West Virginia. Like many Ohio Valley farmers, he received a part of $12 billion in federal relief payments to help with the tariffs. Gibson appreciates Trump's efforts to renegotiate trade deals, but he says he's also disappointed in Trump because he says the relief payments aren't nearly enough. He says milk's price has plummeted nearly a dollar, and the payments only reimburse 12 cents of that.
I would have rather him said, I have to do this, you're going to take the hit, sorry. You know, don't promise me you're going to take care of me and then don't.
He put off paying several repair bills and extended paying his farm loans. He also put up his 150-year-old family farm as collateral to help shore up his loans. Farm lenders say Gibson isn't alone. Mark Barker helps oversee lending in Ohio and Kentucky for Farm Credit Mid-America.
Because we've got customers now who are coming in and they're telling us, I'm struggling at this point. I'm challenged.
And United States Department of Agriculture data shows nationwide farm debt has rapidly increased to levels not seen since the 1980s farm crisis. Tom McConnell leads the Small Farm Center at West Virginia University's Extension Service and lived through the 1980s farm crisis. He says one solution for small Ohio Valley farmers may be to switch to crops that bring a higher value, like tomatoes or greens. But he says that can be difficult.
If you've been in a family that's milked cows or raised row crops for three generations, and then I suggest that they plant 3 acres of sweet corn and 5 acres of snap beans, there will be some resistance to that.
McConnell says tariffs and low prices will also accelerate the trend of farm consolidation. Bigger farms will get bigger. He says it might take a younger generation to redefine what the small farmer business model will look like. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Variable cloudiness today. There's a chance of rain in the east with highs in the 40s. Clear skies tonight with lows in the 20s. Sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 40s and 50s. Mostly sunny on Wednesday with highs again in the 40s and 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Appalachian Power, committed to our customers, communities, and state through corporate philanthropy, volunteerism, customer service, and economic development. More at AppalachianPower.com. One day, West Virginia Public Broadcasting producer Russ Barber started chatting with a very tall and jovial gentleman who was bagging groceries. His name is Anderson Charles. The two became friends. Russ eventually asked if he could share Anderson's story with our audience. It turns out Anderson Charles is a writer who has a memoir called I Am a Dirty Immigrant, about his move from the West Indies to West Virginia. The latest episode of Inside Appalachia features a profile about Anderson Charles by Russ Barber.
The reason why we have conflict with each other is because we don't know each other. We just know what everybody else tells us about each other.
Anderson Charles was born on the British-ruled island of Grenada, which gained independence from Great Britain in 1974. Today, Grenada is the smallest independent country in the Western Hemisphere. The tiny nation is made up of several isles in the southeastern Caribbean Sea and comprises 133 square miles with a population of about 110,000 people. Known as the Island of Spice, Grenada produces nutmeg and is one of the world's largest exporters of mace crops. Nearly half the residents identify themselves as Roman Catholics, but it was a Protestant minister who convinced the 7-foot Grenadian to accept a full basketball scholarship at the Baptist-affiliated Cumberland College in Whitley County, Kentucky.
At the time, we didn't have a university. So we either went to England, or we go to the University of the West Indies, or if we get, like me, get a scholarship to America, we come here. That was the main reason for coming. I wasn't searching for freedom. I wasn't searching for equality and all of that stuff. We had that there already.
Anderson says he wasn't ready for the many changes awaiting him when he arrived in Appalachia.
I landed in Kentucky and it was freezing. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have a jacket. I had one thin Caribbean-style shirt. So I was freezing.
A vegetarian accustomed to eating yams and other roots, Anderson was not prepared for American fast food.
I would get sick all the time because my body wasn't used to that processed food. Most of the stuff I eat, I cook, improvise with Caribbean recipes and stuff and put together.
He received yet another shock when attempting to communicate with local folk and failing to grasp subtle nuances.
Everybody was wondering, did I speak English? Yes, I spoke the Queen's English. You know, so they being from Kentucky and having that accent, I wasn't understanding a thing they were saying. I sort of went into a shell then.
Then he had to come to terms with American slang.
Where I'm from, it's like 86% African origin. So the slang is universal or national. There wasn't any difference in the slangs and stuff that we use. So coming to America, I thought, it's Americans. They all speak the same. No, they don't.
Then there was the fact that he was no longer in the majority when it came to race.
The best way to deal with something like that for me was to break away from cultural barriers and just deal with them as human beings. Then I realized they want the same thing I want. Here are these kids going to college. Education is important in my country, so I could communicate to them on that level, with them on that level. So that's what I had to do from the beginning.
Next, Anderson came face to face with American poverty.
Some people expect the streets to be paved in gold because we get this stuff about how good everything is here. And there was a place where I was in Kentucky called The Bottoms, and people lived there. We would never name a place The Bottoms. You know, we would name it like paradise because, you know, that's what we aspire to. But I started to realize, well, they're not that different. They want to work hard, you know, have a good living and live a normal, peaceful life. But here they are working from paycheck to paycheck just like me, just like we were in the islands.
Anderson says the realities of living in a third world country force communities to work together in order to survive.
I was raised in a village, so we had that village atmosphere. If you have to go to work, you don't have to go get somebody to babysit. You tell the neighbor, watch your kids. And I remember being home alone when I was 8 years old, and the neighbor just come over, hey, okay, I'm watching you, I'll tell your mother. And that would just keep us on the street and narrow. And we don't just call you, we go knock on your door, hey, are you okay? If somebody's sick, we go in and take care of them. If somebody doesn't have food, we would cook and bring food to the house.
Anderson says Grenadians in his community enjoyed a relatively low crime rate and simple way of life as he and other kids hung out at the beach, went snorkeling, and roamed the forest. He adds that despite growing up in such a laid-back environment, he and his siblings were well aware of the consequences of excess and misconduct.
You ever heard an old saying here in West Virginia where they said, go pick the whip outside? There was a specific tree called a tamarind tree. We say tamarind, but it's tamarind. And it's a fruit, a really acidic sour fruit. But the branches on those, you could just tie it. It wouldn't break. That's what some people got whipped with.
He says school teachers were also very strict on Grenada, where the literacy rate today is 96% among people age 15 and older.
They're really strict about punctuality and stuff like that. Really strict about homework.
Anderson says students living on the same relatively small island were naturally drawn together, regardless their social and economic status.
It wasn't segmented into the cool kids, the nerdy kids, because everybody wore uniforms, everybody looked alike. So everybody sort of mingled.
Today, Anderson recommends mingling on a global scale.
Go talk to the villagers, because that's how you're going to know people. You know, don't go to a big city, don't go to Paris. That would be like going to New York. It's industrialized. You have to go talk to the people who live the culture and then listen to them, and you're going to realize that you're not that different. We are not that different.
With his book, I Am a Dirty Immigrant, Anderson brings readers face to face with the clashes of culture common in today's ever-transitioning world.
I always laugh at people when they think the immigration issues is just a big thing here. It's all over the world because everybody is looking for a safer place to be.
After a year at Cumberland College, Anderson married and moved to New York. He later relocated his family to Huntington, West Virginia, where he earned a degree in sociology at Marshall University in 2002. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Russ Barber.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.